Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Roll Friday, played a little bit more. A little more. Half asleep from it already.
Are you? I love
her. All right, terrific. We got the yokels in line. Good. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I don't know what's going on. I feel like somebody has poured glue over my head. I'm shutting down. I'm shutting down from the entire political system. I don't believe a word anybody says in the media. I don't believe a word anybody says in politics. And here I am in the media talking about politics. The day started out terribly. I got to tell you that right now. I may as well tell you the story right off the bat. Then I'll do some of the news and some other stories. But listen to this. This is a real topper. You know how I love my dog, Teddy, the 10-pound, 11-pound miniature poodle. He's like a piece of me, okay? I love the guy. Now, usually about 3 in the morning, he rustles around in the bed and he forces me to get up, which is convenient for a male, actually. I get up anyway. And he goes out in the garden and I stand there freezing or whatever. And let him back in, and then he goes back to sleep until we get up in the morning. But lately, I'm like on strike. I don't want to get up at 3 in the morning and stand there and watch him take a dump in the garden. So what I did last night was he started like rustling around 3 a.m. I knew what it meant, but I'm not in a great mood lately, and I wasn't able to get up for a damn dog and to go watch him, you know, stand in a garden there freezing. So I said, leave me alone, Teddy. Just do what you have. Just leave me alone. So he settled down. I figured, all right, I get up in the morning, everything's fine. And no sign of nothing, this and that. Then I put him in the garden. I see he's doing the circle thing and the squat that makes every dog look like freakish and ugly. And I turned away. I didn't want to see it. But I figured, all right, thank God he waited the night. But it was a slow day. Everything's starting slow. The coffee machine didn't work. That Italian machine, it makes noise and it comes up with, refer to manual and you call and talk to some kid in Newark with like a Rocky accent put in the filter. And I almost got scalded in my groin. I couldn't make coffee. I had to go back to the Sears $10 coffee machine. The white trash coffee cup worked fine. I go downstairs to my studio and boom, guess what Teddy had done? Crapped all over where I sit next to the microphone and the screens. He never did this. Of all the places in the house, look how smart they are and how they'll get even with you because I didn't take him out. He didn't go in a corner under a curtain. He didn't run to the back door and say, Dad, if you find this, it's because you were bad to me. He went downstairs in the dark of night, snuck into my studio where I broadcast from, or I'm sitting in front of the computer all day looking for idiotic stories to report on, and he all over the floor. And here he's here with me now in the radio studio. I didn't hit him. I didn't yell. I just left. That's all. I packed up and got out of the house. And here I am at another house. So what am I going to do? What am I going to do with this world? The dog is even, he's even breaking down from the stress of this world. Who can take this? You got wildfires raging, and the media's reporting was because there wasn't enough equipment, when equipment was sitting on the ground because there weren't fire spotters to go in the Air Force planes, the water tankers. The Russians offered us a super tanker with water that could put out like 4 football fields worth of fire at once, and California wouldn't let them use the plane because it wasn't approved by the EPA. And the Strudelnager says he did a great job. Strudelnager is as good at this as the governor of Louisiana was with Katrina. I mean, Strudelnager is unbelievable. What a flop he is. You know, don't tell me that the muscle man did a good job. He stank. It was his fault if you want to know who did it wrong. And I know he's a putative Republican. The guy is a failure as a governor. Then you got the illegal aliens set the fires. Now there's reports that I was right day one, Al-Qaeda's involved. And we're vulnerable as heck to the Islamic fascist that rages in America, spitting out hatred every day across America at this country, and we don't round them up and intern them. You hear? Because we have an impotent government. We're sitting here every day, they're telling us what they're going to do to us. They should be rounded up and put in internment camps, these people who threaten us. That's right. You heard me. Write it down. People who threaten America should be rounded up and put in internment camps under special laws. You like that? Now, what do I mean by threaten America? You figure it out. I was thinking about something else. What was I thinking about? I was thinking about unsuccessful people that I've known and why they're unsuccessful. I've been thinking about it because for many years I struggled in life. And it wasn't that I wasn't trying. I wrote a lot of books. I made a reasonable living. But it wasn't what I wanted, okay, in terms of success. It was a grind. It was a real grind. And I realized something. Then there were people all the way up and down the scale, way like beyond me and way below me. But I realized that there's a whole class of unsuccessful people in the world. Let's focus on the people you know who have never really made it in life. And I try to ask myself, what do unsuccessful people have in common? And I wrote a few notes down. Tell me if you agree or disagree. Unsuccessful people have an unwillingness to give of themselves or to offer a product or service that people want. Now, I have to add that people want. Many of you out there have offered products or services that people do not want, and they may want it in the future. You could be ahead of your time. You could be a genius. Most likely, you're not a genius. You're just a person who's producing things that nobody wants. But I will say there are many cases where people were ahead of their time, and they did produce great inventions that nobody wanted at the time. But by and large, unsuccessful people are unwilling to give of themselves or to offer a product or service that people want. Let me give you a political example. Liberals offer products that are grossly unpopular. What are these products? Higher taxes, affirmative action, gay marriage. I'm giving you three examples. These are the products that liberals are offering that are grossly unpopular. But because the people don't want them, the liberals still try to force society to buy them, quote unquote, by forcing you to take them through legislation. That's called judge shopping. It's called activist judges. That's how they force gay marriage, affirmative action, or higher taxes down our throat. So in other words, liberals are offering products that are grotesquely unpopular, but they force them on you. They are ultimately unsuccessful politicians. But to return to unsuccessful people per se, they generally see kindness as weakness and only want to take from others. And only grudgingly do they ever offer a kind word or deed to others. Now, this applies to societies as well. I thought about that. For example, our country, the United States of America, is the world's most successful society. And we're also the most giving society on earth, by the way. I don't know if you know that. According to the liberal protocols, we're not a successful society and we don't give much. It's a complete lie. This is the most successful society in terms of the broadest good for the broadest number of people. And it is the most giving in the entire world. That's why we're successful. But to go back to unsuccessful people. Now, there are people who cannot produce a product or a service that people want. I understand that. So let's say they're on the receiving end. They receive gifts from foundations, or they receive a grant rather from a foundation, and they only grudgingly say thank you to the foundation to give them the money. In other words, they don't even go out of their way to cultivate the foundation. Then they wonder why the grant doesn't get renewed. Or let us say they're given a gift from a relative that the relative doesn't owe them. Instead of saying thank you in a profound way, real gratitude, they are grudging in their thanks to the people who give them the money. And the relative says, you know what? Screw you. I don't owe you anything. Why should I give you anything? And then after the money runs out, the unsuccessful person says, oh, woe is me. I wonder why people are so mean in this world. Do you agree with me that unsuccessful people generally are unwilling to give of themselves or to offer a product or service that people want? I think it's an interesting question. Or if you'd rather talk about Teddy and his reaction to my not getting up, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. On MichaelSavage.com, there are some stories that can rip your heart out to show you how degenerate our country has become. Here's a big one, okay? The court has just one of the appeals courts filled with perverts in black robes has just stricken down the anti-pornography law. It's a so-called appeals court filled with plants from the porno industry in Cincinnati. And it's just ruled that the anti-child pornography law violates the First Amendment. Once again, they said it will have a chilling effect if they stop children from being used as figures in internet pornography. Now, you have to ask yourself what kind of country we're living in when the porno industry can buy a judge, put him in a black robe or her in a black robe and sit him on an appeals court. You have to ask what kind of nation we have become and whether we can survive. All right, we can talk about dogs. We can talk about dogs in black robes. We can talk about dogs as people. I'll be right back. Savage. Leave this on. No, turn that. No. Stop. I changed my mind. Just the music. I only want to hear the music. I love Frankie Lyman's music. Love this little guy. What a song, huh? Anyway, that was a great song when it came. It gave me a lot of hope for some reason. I mean, he was 13. He was a little guy. He had the heart of a lion. He sang so great. But his life came to a horrible end. You know, the needle, the girls, the whole thing. And that was the end of him. But what talent, right? I remember that song? Anyway, I do. It's just a little nostalgic thing. Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation. Margaret, you're on the air with Michael Savage and millions of others. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to say hello. And I'm on my way to WIND right now. And to see, find out when you're going to come to Chicago.
No, I haven't been there in a long time. What, you work for WIND?
Yeah, I listen to WIND, and I'm on my way right there. I'm on my way.
No, but I understand, but what's the purpose of the call? I'm not quite sure why you're calling.
Well, I just want to say hello, because I did run into you last week, and just to see how you're doing. And just
I was outside a little restaurant in North Beach, and you introduced yourself. You said you're from Chicago, from WIND, and it was a chance happenstance. I remember that. You were with your husband inside.
Yeah. And I want to say that I want to tell your millions of listeners that you seem like a really great guy, very smart and very cool.
Oh, you mean in real life? I'm not a fake.
Yeah, I think that you're probably somebody that a lot of people should get to know.
Whoa. I hope your husband's not listening.
No, but I can see why you're so popular.
Thanks, Margaret. She runs one of the stations down there, and she had told me that the show is really the most popular show on that station. I just ran into it. Thank you. OR, New York City. Anita, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Michael Savage. How are you? I loved hearing about Teddy, and the one you told this evening was hilarious.
Well, but it's terrible. I mean, you know, my life with Teddy, here it is. It's the ups and downs. It's like a child, you know, but who expected him to pull that stunt on me?
When you speak of him, it sounds like a little child. He does.
But I don't know how to put it to you this way. When my children grew up and left, there was a vacuum in the house. That's the only parents who've, you know, had a child and have raised the child. When the child leaves, there's a vacuum that enters your heart and your mind and your soul that only a parent can appreciate. And that's the good news, meaning they go off to college or whatever. You know what I'm saying? God forbid you should lose a child. I can't imagine that hole, but the point I'm making is when you replace that loss or that emptiness with a dog, they really become like a child to you in a way, strangely enough. If you love animals, you don't have to become a sicko to take care of the child. He's in very many ways, he's like a two-year-old child.
Exactly. I love animals personally. Myself, I just love them.
Do you love them when they crap on the floor under your desk? I don't.
Well, you just have to clean it up. I mean, that's what
happens. Ugh, I didn't clean it up. I ran out of the house. I think it's still waiting for me when I come home tonight. I'll kill him when I get there. He's sitting here looking at him smiling. Makes believe he don't know from nothing. I didn't even hit him. What can you do after the fact? He knows what he did. He knows what he did. He did it because I wouldn't get up. So tonight I have a real dilemma. Now I won't even be able to fall asleep for fear that I'll fall asleep and I won't wake up. I don't know what he'll do next. No, I'm not going to let him train me. Never. I'll have to deal with this one in another way. Do you want to talk about the news? I can't believe the news out there. It's so awful. It's so horrible. It's so disgusting. It's so heartbreaking. You know, the fires alone that they're covering up, that the government will not really talk about the arsonists. The media won't talk about the, they'll mention it. They have to. They grudgingly are mentioning the arsonists, and grudging, even more grudgingly, they tell you one was a Guatemalan. But now the Al-Qaeda link is coming up and not being denied by various governmental spokes, folks. And we realize how vulnerable we are. In other words, because we're an open society and filled with cowards and crippled bureaucrats, virtually they could do whatever they want to us because we have nothing but con men running everything. Look at Strudelnagel. Strudelnagel sits there and congratulates. I saw it when he started talking Monday, like he already had the fires under control. All he did was think he was starring in a movie. He thanked himself for doing nothing. Then he thanked the mayor for doing nothing. Then he wanted to thank the fire chief for doing nothing. And the fires are raging. There's Strudelnagel standing. What is he? So now it turns out Strudelnagel was the man who let the fires rage. He could have, with the stroke of a pen, permitted the Air Force helicopters and planes to go up. But he didn't. And the reason is because some dumb California agency did not send fire monitors out for 24 hours that were required by state law to sit in the planes as overseers before the water planes could be. Can you believe this? Whoever did this should be arrested, by the way. Whoever in the state of California did not permit the Air Force to launch their planes to drop the water because the fire spotters were not in the planes, should be arrested and put in jail for 20 years and their property seized. You know, only when we start making the bureaucrats pay with their own money and their pensions will we start getting a bureaucracy that is responsive to the people. People.
Savage.
There's a
listening to the best hits of rock and roll on the Savage Nation. The best of the 50s and 60s. I'm going to give up politics completely, forever. I'd rather talk about poodle poop than Hillary Clinton. I would find it more interesting to analyze poodles and their poop habits than to talk about Democrats and Republicans, to be honest with you. That's how far it's fallen. I mean, I'm devolving. Maybe I'm devolving mentally from the stress of listening to this rubbish day in and day out. Joan, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. It's such a pleasure to speak with you. We love you. You're brilliant, and you're so right about everything.
That's a nice opening. Who can disagree with you?
I know. I just had to call you because I had a poodle. Beauregard, and he lived till 15. But
oh, thank God!
Every time we went out, we came home, and there was the poodle poop all over the floor.
Ugh.
But I couldn't. It was just so funny because you.
But he doesn't do this to us. He doesn't do it to us. It was only last night he punished me.
Oh, okay. So, well, mine used to do it like he's getting back at us because.
Oh, let's not. Now we're going to get. It's already too scatological, but. All right, thank you. See, watch a show devolve before your eyes. Just watch a show go right down the tubes. I'm reaching a point where I don't know whether this is more interesting than listening to the wisdom of George Bush. I don't know whether I'd rather... Okay, listen to clip 27, and then I'm going to ask you, would you rather listen to that and talk about it or talk about dogs? Go ahead.
What are you going to talk about?
Yeah.
A fraud? No, it wasn't a fraud, but I'll be glad to talk to you if you'll shut up and let me talk now. And a fraud? Let me tell you something. I'll tell you a couple of stories about fraud. The Bohemian Club. Did you say the Bohemian Club? That's where all those rich Republicans go up and stand naked against redwood trees, right? I've never been to the Bohemian Club, but you ought to go. It'd be good for you. Get some fresh air.
I mean, you got to hand it to Clinton, Bill Clinton. He talked back to the left-wing psychos. See, that's what's missing in Bush, is that fire in the belly. That's what we're all missing in this country. We don't even care what the politics are anymore. We want someone to stand up to the vermin. We do. That's what it comes down to. That's why I'd rather talk about poodle poop than politics today. You know, it's all so wishy-washy. What else do you have in there? Arson investigation. They'll never report on it. It'll be dropped like everything else. And the code Stinko should be put in jail, with the one running up to Condi Rice with the blood in her hands. Ben Affleck sharing his thoughts with Larry King. Wow. Two brain trusts. That's like Schopenhauer meets Beethoven right there. Man, I can't miss that conversation, but I think I'll pass on that soundbite. Ben Affleck, wow. His thoughts with Larry King. What do we have here? I'm going through the soundbites now. Bush and Strudelnager speaking to people in Southern California on the fires. I want to hear Strudelnager. Let's hear clip 11.
I want to say thank you, first of all, to President Bush.
Wait, is he speaking with a translator? Is he speaking in Austrian with an American translator now in order to make Bush look like he understands Austrian? You know what I love about Bush is, like, when a foreigner talks to him, like, let's say he's in let's pick another country. He's in the Ukraine. And the Ukrainian leader is speaking in Ukrainian. And he sits there and looks at him and nods like he's understanding every word. And you know he doesn't understand a word. Like, he's getting it. Not a word. He doesn't understand a word. This is unbelievable to me. Put Schwarzenegger, Doc back on.
I want to say thank you, first of all, to President.
What are you thanking him for? You all did nothing.
Tremendous support.
And for get off the show. Get off. That's why I didn't have you on the show when you ran. I don't care how popular you are. You don't fool me for a second. Louisiana Governor-elect Bobby Jindal. I talked about him. The first Indian American. I almost said American Indian governor. No, he's the first. This is an interesting one. It's a new hyphenated American. He's the first Indian American governor in U.S. history, not the first American Indian governor. That's interesting. Of course, the reason you're not hearing about it is because he's a conservative. Then we have how the border fence with Mexico actually stopped the wildfire. You didn't hear about that? Listen to clip 25.
This is actually a time in which many on the Mexican side of the U.S.-Mexico border think it's a good thing that this fence was built all along the border. In this case, the border fence actually served as a firewall, preventing the fire from crossing from the United States into Mexican territory.
Yeah, did it stop the illegals from coming in or only stop the fire from going there? If it stopped the illegals from coming in, I would say it was worth building. What else do we have there? What's the news? FEMA, they had a news conference with no reporters there. Did you hear about the new government? It's right out of the Soviet Union. It's unbelievable. FEMA puts on a news conference like yesterday, and it's like an audience, and the audience is supposedly reporters, but it's FEMA workers posing as reporters, asking the FEMA guy or girl what they're doing to help in the fire, and there's no reporters there. It's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable. This is right out of the ex-Soviet Union. It's getting crazier by the second. They're not even bothering arguing with the reporters now. They're just putting in fake reporters. Hey, where's the story? Did you hear? This is terrible news. This is really sad. I know it's gonna really depress a lot of you, but Paris Hilton has canceled the trip to Rwanda. I don't know who came up with that one. This is wait. I got to get that story. I'm going to get it for the next segment. It's on another desk. I'm afraid to leave the chair here because Teddy's nearby, and God knows he's liable to misinterpret my getting up from the broadcast desk to go to the other desk to get the paper. He's liable to think I'm abandoning him, and next thing I'll know, bing again. Tim, WTNT Washington. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, I wanted to ask you. Every once in a while, I'll hear you recap. And the best of Michael Savage. And you are so good when you talk about food, your mother, the things you miss from New York City. I grew up in Jersey, so I'm very familiar with a lot of the things that you talk about. Anything that comes to mind, I would love to hear.
You mean what I miss from my childhood?
Yeah, what you miss from...
Well, there's nothing in New York that I particularly can't get here now. What do I, you know, God bless people in New York, but I live where I can get anything I really want. What I want is not a physical need right now. It's a spiritual need. It's not going to be found in a restaurant. But if you ask me what I miss, the first thing that comes to my mind, you want to hear what I miss the most from my childhood? The number one thing, you want to hear it, is the image of snow falling against storm windows outside my little bedroom, my cubicle on Utopia Parkway. That was one of the greatest times of my life was the first snowfall that came in. And you're in that warm room with the steam on. Now, you know how big that room was that I had? This is amazing. Those row houses that we grew up in, the brick houses, they were 20 feet wide. They were, the whole property was 100 feet deep, so the house must have been, I don't know, 50 of it? It couldn't have been more than 50, 20 wide. You had a little hallway the size of a thin person, which included a closet. You then had a staircase going up. To the right was the so-called living room. Next to it was the so-called dining room, and next to that was the so-called kitchen, a pantry kitchen and a little sitting area. And upstairs were the master bedroom, which is the size of a Beverly Hills dental hygienist closet, then two bedrooms for the children. I had the smaller bedroom. I don't know how big it was. It couldn't have been more than, if you laid on the floor, it couldn't have been more than 7 feet long and, eight. It was probably 10 by 7, like a jail cell, in other words. The prisoners at Guantanamo have a bigger space than I did in that house, but I didn't know it. What did I care? It was a cozy little room. But it looked out on a very busy street like Utopia Parkway, and the buses rumbled by all the time. Now, come the winter, you put in the storm windows. That's what I liked. That was a big thing. You get them out of the basement. Dad would get the storm windows out of the basement. Why? Well, the storms are coming. And they made sense. You took out the screens and you put in the storm windows. And they went in right over the steam. They don't even make heat like that anymore. California is terrible on heating and air conditioning. I got to tell you. They don't have like steam heat out here. Like, it's a rarity. I like the hiss. I like to hear that hissing all night long. Anyway, you had the storm window. So when that snow would come and the windows would somewhat freeze over, the snowflakes against the window with a rumbling Q44A, there was nothing like it. I could use it right now. I'm thinking of buying a lodge again. I'm going through the doldrums. I'm trying to think what I want to do with the rest of my life now. So I'm not sure. I think I do want to get the Savage Lodge. I'm going through that fantasy again. I don't like serving people. I'm going to sit there and polish glasses and listen to, you know, would it really work? I'm going to eat sandwiches with people I don't know? I mean, I'm a loner when it comes down to it. I don't know. Sound like a Timberline Lodge. It's rough hewn. It's got, you know, log lodge, 25 rooms, no more. You know, the animals, the dogs, you know, like Sergeant Preston of the Yukon's plane is sitting in the lake with the pontoons. And at the spur of the moment, I and the pilot can take off because I can't fly a plane. And I have like a Chris Craft, a retro Chris Craft redo that's perfect mahogany shining with canvas over it, waiting to zip me across the lake to Zeke's house or something. What do I know? How long would this fantasy last? I don't know. I'm a dreamer, so therefore I don't think I'll do it. I wouldn't mind a lodge, but who says I have to be there all the time? I don't want to have to be in a lodge. It'd be fun. It would be fun in a way to have all. But what if it's conservatives, but you get a lib in there just to disturb people? What if you get one of those big-hatted women who look like Barbara Boxer who comes there just out of spite to shoot her Brooklyn mouth off at everybody in the bar? Well, you could take her on a Sicilian fishing trip in the Chris Craft. That is true. You could invite her out, and if she doesn't want to go, you get out the rug, and you roll her up, and you take her for a ride, like a cigar. And you hope that – and that could – that solves the problem because you have a – you can rent the room again. I'm not – I wouldn't do that. I'm a fun-loving man. I'm nice to people. I let flies out of window screens. What are you talking about here? There's nothing in the news, I got to tell you. Putin, Schmutin, Ahmanajad, all aboard. I can't take it anymore. Giuliani, Romney, Hillary, Obama, all aboard. The whistle stop. How many years can they run this campaign? How many years can this go on? I've never seen anything like this. A year ago, they started this because you don't care about the election, and they know it. It's like the most out-of-date thing in the world, our elections. Nobody wants to vote anymore, except the diehards. So they have to get you interested. So now years ahead, they come up with these campaigns. So where is it all going to end? And it's really important, by the way, who wins. That's the terrible truth of it. Just look at the judges, what they can do to us, you know. Look at the incompetence of Arnold Schwarzenegger. You got raging fires, and they don't want water bombers that the Air Force had ready to go because they didn't have California State fire spotters ready to sit in the plane like the dumb bureaucrats they are and tell them, all right, now fly over there, fly over. It's unbelievable. Who came up with that rule? You need a fire spotter in an airplane. The pilots were dying to take off with the water, and they couldn't do it. But that won't get much play. Maybe it will. I don't know. Could be. Give me some rock and roll. I had an espresso and a piece of chocolate before the show, and I still don't feel my head's not working yet. Still not working. Caffeine, the sugar, the theobromine.
You train.
Turn that off. That is so not me. Frankie Lane Mule Train? Even when it came out, I hated it. I got a migraine from it. I had to stay out of school for a day after that song came out. Give me something melodic in the rock and roll area. I'll do nostalgia for a minute. Okay, now you know. There it is. Right. 56 Plymouth. Oh, it's going to be that again. Same image. Where is she today? I don't ever want to see her again. Making out by the water treatment plant there. God. I remember the year. Remember the year. The 56 Plymouth Fury was first love by the sewer plant. Hey, hold it. That was the part. I did this before. Every time I hear this song, and I came up with the same memory. First love by the sewer by the sewer treatment plant. That's right. The same exact song. The same image came up. That's right. That's right. I can't tell the story here because it's a mixed. It's a family audience. There's nothing really naughty about it, but it just doesn't play on AM radio. You can't tell it. In a nightclub, yes, I could tell about various things, but then you'd get near the blue dress with Clinton, and I don't want to go there. I don't want to go in that direction because it would be misinterpreted as a normal, healthy young man in America. That's all. We can't have that. Now, if I told you there was some sick perversion or something like that, then it'd be perfectly wholesome for America today. Play it again. Let's see what else comes up in the memory bank. Let's see. Just try me. Fire away. I have the guts to try it. I don't care.
Are the stars out tonight?
Yeah, that was the same summer, Jackie in the pool. That's right.
I don't know if the sky.
That's right. Oh, God, I thought everyone would live forever. How did I know? I can turn it off. I'm starting to get tears in my eyes. Everyone's dead. What are you playing that for? They're all dead. I'm the only one living from that era, practically. I thought they'd live forever. I had no idea people were mortal. Who knew at that time that every uncle and aunt would die a horrible death of cancer or a heart disease screaming in bed? I had no idea. It was everyone was healthy, pickles and food and pass this and give me more of that. And everyone was full of sap and vinegar and life. Who ever thought that they would die screaming and the doctors would deny them medication? I didn't. So, that's a real show winner right there. What else do we have out there in the Savage Nation? Nothing. Nothing. We're dry. We're dead. We're at the end of the road here in this particular segment. So give me another rock and roll. I can't go to a break on that. No, I can't. I got to get into a positive mode. Let me think now. All right. That's a little different. Lamp. My clown lamp. Various clown shades. Finished basement. Pole lamp. Orange, green, pastel colors. Bumping and grinding in the basement. Sweating, almost dying with excitement. Drinking booze out of the girl's parents' liquor cabinet. Illegally, of course. Actually, it's one of the best nights of my life now that I think back. Thank God for underage drinking in those days. I'll be right back. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Wildfires, illegal immigrants, Armenia, Korea, Israel, Iran, Yemen, cold, Putin, fires, Marines, Islamofascism, Turks, climate, glaciers, polar bears, Somali poets, sex assault, terrorists, Muslims, ham sandwiches, Edwards, makeup, hairdos, Bonnie Frank, corks, DNA pioneer Watson, racism, Democrats whistle. It was the first time I actually did the laundry was after that night. My mother came home and said, what are you doing the laundry? You never did it your whole life. Oh, no, Mom, I wanted to give you a rest. But you've never used a laundry machine before. That's okay, Mom. I just take a break tonight from the laundry, Mom. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. Well, we're going to have a couple of more laughs here on the Savage Nation today. I don't know. I don't think there's – what am I going to do with politics anymore? What can I do? Very little, because Huckabee is a – his name tells it all. The reason Huckabee can get nowhere no matter what his ratings are within the Republican Party, I'll give you an example. The first syllable of his name, Huck, tells you everything about the man politically. According to reports I've read, he destroyed the Republican Party in the state in which he was the governor, and he left the Republican Party and the conservative movement in shambles. So you take the word Huckabee, and everything you want to know, you hear in the word Huck. The name is unelectable. That's all. That's number one. You know, names are very important. I got to tell you that right now. I mean, it's like a title of a book. He's unelectable, politically and name-wise. He can't win. And I've said to you before, he who has most hair wins. Which worries me because Hillary has more hair than Giuliani. Now, we got to get a candidate on the conservative side who has hair. This is a problem. Most of them are like bald and ugly. Did anyone talk about the ugly factor in terms of Republican candidates? Wait a minute, Romney. Romney's a handsome man with hair. I predict he could win based on hair alone.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
That's the world I grew up in. I'm a product of my time. I can't help it, and I don't apologize for it. That's all. That's all. See the USA in a hibachi today. Japan is asking you to call. Thank you. All right, it's enough already with the dancing boys and the dancing cigarettes and this and that. I see that Pelosi is trying to defuse tensions with Turkey. Well, thank God it's almost Thanksgiving, and we wish her the best in her attempts at that. Now on to the Savage Nation where, I don't know, there's no politics. There's nothing to discuss. It's all the same rubbish day in and day out. We're all waiting for something terrible to happen. As human beings, we know something horrible is going to happen very soon. We sense it. We know we're surrounded. Look, let's be logical about it. Bush has fundamentally opened up the borders to illegal aliens by the millions. Into this mix has come hundreds of thousands of Middle Easterners. They all can't want to be here. Some want to do us harm. So wouldn't it make sense that some of these millions of illegal aliens are plotting to bring us damage? Well, we just had wildfires in Southern California, and some of the perpetrators were arsonists, and some of the arsonists were illegal aliens. That's number one. Now there's talk that some of the arson was possibly set off by terrorists. Will we ever know? No, we will never know. And the reason the government doesn't want, let's say they could definitively find that Al-Qaeda did it or Hezbollah had plants here or was Iran sending us a message. You think they're going to tell you? Never. Never. The times are not only they are changing, the times have changed so much that we're living in our own world right now, which is why I really just want to do a little nostalgia, talk about dogs. If you force me to, I will analyze political topics for you. You can bring up the topic. I'll do the best I can. Jerusalem, Tehran, Paris, London, Rome, Pyongyang, you name it. Give me the code word and ask me the question. I'll give you one man's opinion. That's all. Or we could do some old rock and roll, and I can just do nostalgia if you'd like. Why does everyone love nostalgia when I do it? Well, because I can take you back to a time that some of you know and some of you don't know but wish you did know, because it was a saner time in American history. It was a more stable country. It was a better place. It was a much better place. And now we're living in very, very tenuous times, and people are perplexed and they're frightened. And we don't know what's coming tomorrow. I mean, that's the reality of it. So it's a human desire to, go backwards in some way. I can't do that every day, so I'm not going to do it much more. You know, maybe I'll throw one more song in there and do one more nostalgia. I know many of you tune in because you like my politics. You know that when it comes to political views, you like mine. And I'll do that for you if that's what you want. But every day, it's impossible to do it, you know. Hey, did you read the story? I have it up on my website, michaelsavage.com, from the Daily Mail. Human race will split into two different species. So a so-called evolutionary theorist at LSE, the London School of Economics, has predicted that the human race will one day split into two separate classes. One will be an attractive, intelligent, ruling elite, and an underclass of dim-witted, ugly, goblin-like creatures, according to a top scientist. Now, I don't know whether he was inadvertently talking about the Democrats here when he said an underclass of dim-witted, ugly, goblin-like creatures, but it sure brings to mind a certain number of Democrats immediately. You're telling me that Bonnie Frank, dim-witted, ugly, goblin-like creatures? I can name five Democrats that already look like they're in that class. Now, I'm not saying that the Republicans are an attractive, intelligent, ruling elite, although it is in a way. Very, very interesting. It says 100,000 years into the future, sexual selection will mean the two distinct breeds of human will have evolved, okay? Human race will have reached its physical peak by the year 3000. These humans will be between 6 feet and 7 feet tall, and they will live up to 120 years. Men will have symmetrical facial features, deeper voices, and bigger penises. Wow. Women will all have glossy hair, smooth hairless skin, large eyes, and pert breasts, according to Dr. Curry in a report that he has just put out. I can't wait. It's 1,000 years from now. I'm going to miss that one, huh? Imagine I could be 7 feet tall. God, and all these women running around, and they all have glossy hair, smooth hairless skin, large eyes, and pert breasts. Damn! I can't be here 100,000 years from now. Racial differences will be a thing of the past as interbreeding produces a single coffee-colored skin tone. It says it's not all good news for our descendants, however. While humans will reach their peak in 1,000 years' time, 10,000 years later, our reliance on technology will have begun to dramatically change our appearance. Medicine weakens our immune system, and we will begin to appear more childlike. You mean like who? Anyway, that's it. I don't believe a word of it. You know, it's an interesting, idea, but the fact of the matter is, how do we know what's going to be here? Never mind 3,000, 10,000, or 100,000 years from now. Tell me what's going to be here a year from now, and I'll tell you you're crazy if you can predict that. WTNT, Washington, D.C., the heart of the monster. Lee, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm a research scientist, and I'm very well known in the field of the evolution of modern human intelligence and nutrition. And in our field, we find that the Africans are definitely less intelligent. We can't speak out about it, but it's because you have 10 and 15 generations of endemic malnutrition. No iodine, no zinc, no iron, not enough protein, not enough sulfur amino acids. And when you put these people side by side, they're mentally retarded by Western standards.
Now, you haven't published, of course, because you'd lose your position if you espouse such a theory.
And I said that I would be happy to give you my last name off the air, and you can check my publication record. I was one of the first people to bring back the theory that modern humans evolved by the waterside, you know, eating the DHA and such from the shellfish. But we do.
Wow, no wonder I'm drawn to the water. Okay, so let's turn the question around. Which society has produced the brightest people, if you're alleging the opposite?
Nutrition puts you on a track. You know, the field.
Whoa, you're not answering the question. Can you hear me at all?
What was the question? I had a little difficulty hearing it.
All right, I want you to listen carefully because it's talk radio. It goes two ways. Let's take the question and reverse it. Which society then has produced the most intelligent people?
Unquestionably, the people who originated from what we would call Western Europe. No question, because they...
Wait. You're saying, now your theory is that nutritional deprivation has produced a diminution of intelligence in Africans. So how do you explain the fact that the Ashkenazi Jews, who produced some amazing minds, lived in deprivation for 1,000 years? They were living on gruel. I mean, they didn't have much food. There was very little food. They were living on, what, buckwheat? Some rare vegetables. What were they living on? They didn't have great food.
They didn't have crap either. One of the things that Watson's remarks aren't being said about is that he was talking about sub-Saharan Africa, and I am too. I'm saying that if you try to take a cross-section of school children and give them an IQ test in sub-Saharan African schools, and you give a cross-section of children in the U.S. or Canada or Japan the exact same test, you will never even hardly get an overlap in the test scores. In the mean, you see what I'm saying?
Well, I understand, but how would you react to the criticism that IQ tests are pretty specifically written for the society that is taking the test?
You know, they have IQ tests for autistic people where they have to stack rings and do crossword and do puzzles. You know, do things that are just basically spatial relations. There's
okay.
A lot of logic that can go into that. You can give somebody a Rubik's Cube and teach them what to do, and you'll see that there's some people who can do it very fast, and you'll see that there's some people who never even get the concept of what they're supposed to do. You know, you can smell the wood burning. You don't even give them credit for mechanization. This is the way...
Where have you published, Lay? What kind of journals?
Lee, I've published in everything from geochemistry journals to botany journals.
But haven't you been blacklisted as a result of it, so to speak?
British Journal of Nutrition, where we finally...
But Lee, you're not hearing me. Haven't you been ostracized because of these publications?
The way it is that I haven't said it per se. I'm saying that in the entire field of what you call brain-specific nutrition, we all know this goes on. It's like the big elephant that's in the room that you ignore. The World Health Organization.
All right, but Watson just got fired, basically, because of this. He was forced to resign. You haven't been forced to resign?
Watson said it on purpose. He wanted to make sure that it was his dying, that he did not die before he got this information out. Because I'm saying we all go to conferences and we just ignore this great big problem, which is that you need to intervene in Africa and give people 10 generations. You see, the mothers are so deficient in things.
So you're not arguing that the people are inherently unintelligent. You're saying they've been deprived nutritionally. That's a very different argument, isn't it?
He's saying that you cannot have a fair test. If you intervene and you give these people the 10 generations of better living conditions that industrialized countries have had, then you might see a difference. You got to get these pregnant women in there and feed them correctly. Put them, I mean, for, you know, Michael, 50,000 years ago, there was 50,000 of us in the whole world. The resources we had to eat were phenomenal. We are not based to live on a diet of pie crust. We need to eat fruit.
Hey, Lee, you and I are kindred spirits, but let me ask you something. Being an evolutionary nutritionist, if that's whatever you want to call yourself, what would you think this society is producing now when you see the mothers driving up in their SUV to a Starbucks and giving the kid coffee and a pastry in the morning and then throwing a Ritalin pill into him? What is that child going to be in 20 years?
Well, it's a horrible sight, as are all the diabetic children. I'm very much an expert in type 2 diabetes, too. And one of the things that we know for sure, and I'll tell you the scientist's name, it's Norm Salen Jr. He's given rats, you know, three generations of deprivation of the essential fatty acid DHA, and by the third generation, they can't even do mazes that their grandparents did.
That's a component of fish oil, by the way, for the people listening to the show. So, Lee, where did you get your degree? Where did you study?
I got my PhD in planetary geochemistry and physical chemistry from the University of Arizona in Tucson when I was 25 years old.
Well, I'm sure you're very proud of it because there are a lot of fake degrees out there. Yours is the real McCoy.
I have a very, you know, hard science background, but I took in nutrition as a hobby, and I ended up being a consultant for the natural products industry.
Are you in good shape yourself? Are you physically in good shape?
Oh, man, I can swim 200 fly. I'm in fantastic shape. I called one time because I was in water.
No, I like it because you're very, very, into yourself. It's great to hear. Most people don't have this kind of confidence anymore. I love it.
But one of the things that I...
But you're so unacademically. You're so not an academic type.
That's because
you're affirmative. You are making a positive statement without hesitation. You're not positing and saying it, perhaps, you know, and you're in love with yourself. How do you survive in the university system?
Well, I actually work for the USDA, for the Agricultural Research Service. Prior to that, I worked for NASA. And it is very difficult because many years ago, I realized when I heard your show and I heard somebody said liberalism is a mental disorder, I said, finally somebody coined the phrase. Because I work at the USDA, it's not a problem, but my God, NASA, there is nobody there who's conservative except in the engineering. In the science wings, they're all so crazy. They sit there and they ignore their own data and drive out the door.
They're all crackpots. Lee, would you please stay on the line? I can't wait to look you up on the internet. During the break, can you forward stuff about yourself? I want to research you and come right back to this call. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation. Kill the song. Definitely not my favorite. I don't know what we're talking about here, but we have a PhD scientist who says that Dr. Watson was right. But she's not saying the African is inherently less intelligent than others. She is saying that they were nutritionally deprived for so long that the only solution is an introduction of nutritional, I wouldn't say products, but nutritionally important foods. I'm not going to give out the doctor's name, but I'm on the website. She's a black belt in combat Kenpo Jitsu, a weightlifting and swimming enthusiast, and she grows her own herbs, vegetables, and orchids. Lee, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Lee, how did you get into combat Kenpo Jitsu?
Oh, I've done all kinds of sports, but most of them I did when I was younger, and I never did pick up martial arts until I was a little bit older, but I was a pro bodybuilder, so I found that they poo-pooed weightlifting and karate, but you want to win a fight. You go fight against a girl who weight trains compared against a girl who doesn't. There's no comparison.
Ooh, you're a tough one. You're a tough one, Lee. I don't know how you get along in a government bureaucracy. They'd be afraid of you when you walk through the door.
Open water swimming. I have a house in Cape Hatteras, and I swim in the ocean by myself, and that doesn't really impact anybody. I see some dolphins once in a while, but that's about it.
Now, it says you grow orchids. What kind of orchids do you like?
I like to go to Home Depot and get the ones that are marked down that nobody wants and bring them home and make them bloom again.
It's funny. You talk about orchids and nutrition. I grew orchids for a while, then I sort of didn't. Then I just buy the commercial ones. I have two orchids in my bathroom. It's now the fourth year that I'm having it bloom. 4 years, four blooms. And the other one won't bloom at all. Bought them at the same time. Both dropped the first flowers at the same time. Identical nutrition. How do you explain that?
Some of these plants that are for sale, again, at a, I don't mean to single out a, you know, we're not talking about a great big nursery that's devoted to orchids. I know.
We're almost out of time. Lee, stay on the line. This is so good. So good.
Savage.
Look at me. I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree. And I feel
hello,
like
ladies.
I'm clinging.
This is Michael Savage. I'm back with you to bring you the best of ideas. I hope you're having a good evening tonight. Is this Play Misty for me? This is amazing. It's like that movie. Wow. All right, turn it off. Is this Play Misty for me? Is that the name of that song? That was a great movie. I loved it with Clint Eastwood. He had that Jag XK-140, Monterey radio station, disc jockey, crazy woman, taking the keys from his car. What a movie that was. The knife scenes. Those were great days, the 70s. People were in some ways crazier, but in some ways the society was not as crazy. Well, actually, it was pretty crazy then. What are you talking about? It was crazier then than now. Everyone's like subdued on drugs today. It's Prozac has destroyed this country. Everyone's too mellow and like there's like, you know, like there's no really ups and downs. It's all fake. Entertainers go up and down, you know, but the average person is dying to be like a harmonium. People are not harmoniums. WTNT again, Washington, D.C. L.E., welcome. You have a countervailing viewpoint from the last caller. You're welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. It's an honor for me to be speaking with you. And I have a great respect for you and a great respect for your view. Let me ask you this. How would you explain somebody like me who came here in 1998, did not speak an English word, and today I have earned 2 master's degrees? How could you explain that?
Well, I have met Africans who are very, very smart. Most of the Africans I know are very successful as well in this country.
Okay, then it's not true that another one...
Ali, wait, before we go to the next step, are you from Nigeria by any chance?
No, I'm not. I'm from West Africa. I'm from Guinea, and I speak French. We don't speak English in my country. We speak French.
Mm-hmm.
I learned English when I came to this country. That's what I started from tennis. I came here in 1998.
I've seen the same thing. I've seen that the recent wave of African immigrants seem to do very well.
Then that tells you that, you know, there's no one race more intelligent. We're not. Let me tell you this. Some of my classmates had big respect for us. Somebody told me one day, say, guys, I have big respect for you guys because I could not have done what you guys are doing here. I can't go to your country and earn a 2 master's degree in French.
So what you're saying is, given the opportunity, people can use their native intelligence.
Of course. Of course. Now, let me tell you what Africans' problem is. The problem in Africa is selfishness. Because people are selfish. It started way back in slavery. How could somebody see himself selling another human being because he is just his master? That's mean. That's what Africa's problem are. If I leave here right now with my 2 master's degree and go back to my country, guess what's going to happen to me? I'm going to be marginalized. Because people just going to say, oh God, he's going to be here. He's going to take my job away from me. I won't be. So they are selfish. It's the same thing that's going in our politics. It's the same problem.
So in a way, you're saying it's a political problem as well as much as anything else.
Exactly.
And that until Africa evolves into a more democratic system, the country is going to remain in the state that it's in. Ali, let me send you a free copy of my DVD. I meant to send it to the doctor as well, but I didn't do that. Ali's going to get a free copy of my Freedom of Speech DVD. I have met Africans. Somehow they do well. I don't see them running around screaming for – they never ask for affirmative action. It's an amazing, you know, story there. You know, you have to ask yourself why. How come they come here and they make the best of the situation? They never talk about racism or I never hear it. I can't say I know every African who's ever come here, but I don't hear them complaining. They don't have, like, organizations demanding something for nothing. I noticed something else, you know, which is that Caribbean, black people from the Caribbean have always come here and worked very hard and done very well. I've seen that, too. It's another thing, having lived in a multicultural city. You know, you're not blind if you look around. So I don't have the answer to this question. It's probably a multidimensional question and a multidimensional answer is what the answer is here. You know, I don't think it's a single answer. It's not race. It's not nutrition. It's not politics. God only knows what it is. But Ali has called, and I gave him a shot, and there it was. You heard two sides of the story, and now let's move on, because there's no point in talking about this anymore. It's going to make people, you know, either feel superior because they aren't, or feel inferior because they aren't, and we don't want to do that. And I don't think it's a healthy area to go into. So we did it, and that's the end of it. We've talked about it, and now I think it's time to go into some other topic. KNEW, San Francisco. Emil, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the program. What's on your mind?
Your mention of nostalgia, Mike. I wish that we could walk together back in time when we both wore a younger man's clothes, you know. When,
yes, sir.
When every day we heard the sounds of Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Kay Smith, Jerry Vale, Fats Domino.
Hey, Mia, look, I know who you are. Were the times better or not?
I think that they were a lot better, a lot easier, and we dealt with everyday issues a lot better. And I'm no PhD like Lee, but, you know, back then when we were young, we had all the answers, and, you know.
Wait a minute. Let's talk about that for a minute. Emil, I'm going to say I don't know your last name, which is good, but let's put aside PhDs, MDs, LSMFTs. Let's put aside degrees. Let's talk about intelligence. You were a DEA agent for many years. I would say that requires a tremendous amount of intelligence in order to survive that world, wouldn't you?
A mix of intelligence, but more bravado, more attitude, more confidence.
Whoa, 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 whoa. But what is bravado and attitude? Isn't that intelligence? The ability to pull off a charade, isn't that intelligent?
To continue it, yes, and that is quite an art and a talent that you develop over time, especially, and it's made easier based on where you grew up and what you saw as a younger man.
Well, wait, you and I both know another DEA agent quite celebrated named Michael, correct?
That's correct.
And Michael grew up in the Bronx. Michael was of Jewish parentage, and yet he passed for a Colombian narco dealer, or Bolivian or Colombian, and because he could speak Spanish fluently, he was in situations where he could have gotten knocked off. Wouldn't you say that took a high degree of intelligence, just as your world did? I mean, you know, the things you did?
Absolutely. And Mike Levine, and we can talk about his last name, because you know, he's out there right now, very professional, wrote a few books. He's got, he knows both sides of the streets. He's a quick thinker. He's a quick, he moves fast, and he usually does.
But wait a minute, you just hit the nail on the head again. Quick thinker. Wouldn't that be in the mark of intelligence, whether it's him, you, or anyone else?
You're on the money, Michael.
All right, so what I'm saying is degrees to me don't impress me. What impresses me is quick thinking that, you know, has survival value to it. You know, Emil, I went through some periods in my life that I don't want to talk about because it'll sound like I'm a complainer, but I had to shed a lot of things to get where I am right now, and you know what I came down to? One word, survival. My religion became the religion of survival. Do you know that, Emil? I didn't care what the tool was that I used, and I used everything. I used various religions and various thought patterns and various this and various that and nutrition and this and that, you name it. But to me, the religion became one word, the religion of survival, Emil. And unto itself, that becomes a whole world, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And the fear of failure is always there, and I think that it moves us to great levels. And that's why...
Now, that's an interesting point you just made. That is a great point, because I remember reading in the 60s that some Japanese students would come over here, and if they didn't get straight A's at MIT, some of them killed themselves because they failed their parents and their relatives in Japan. Remember those stories?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you don't see that today. Today they have closure and balloons and clowns and dolls they put outside the door. If the guy doesn't, if the guy gets straight A's, they think he's sick. They put him on drugs. They figure, why is he driven so much to want to get straight A's? It's a crazy world, Emil. The important thing is that you hang around with your friends up in that clubhouse there on Potrero Hill, and you make pasta, and you drink your wine, and you play bocce. I think that's what's important.
That's priority right now. We made it through the rain, and we're waiting for you to come up there and teach us a few things. You know what I mean, Mike?
Yeah, but I don't know. You're up there in that neighborhood there. I don't know who you guys really are. I mean, you sound like a good guy, but who else is in that clubhouse?
I don't ask questions, Mike.
Oh, well, that's a good answer. It shows you have a high IQ. Emil, thanks for calling the Savage Nation. Common sense. James, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I totally disagree with this idea of the good old days, nostalgia. I mean, that was the back of the bus days. I mean, you want to keep playing music from back then. Why don't you play Pat Boone butchering Little Richard because of white radio and black radio?
Right, right. I knew I'd hear that. I was trying to get you to come out of your drug stupor.
How about guys?
We all admit that those times were bad for black people. We are all glad that there was a civil rights movement. Now may we continue our little white nostalgia, James?
One and World War II, but because he donated money to the loyalists in the Spanish Civil War, who were fighting against Hitler-backed fascists, he was jailed, had all his money taken away, and was driven.
How did you wind up hating America so much? Is what I want to know. Was it a nutritional deprivation in you or in your mother's womb? Why do you hate this country?
But it's a fact.
Makes you get up every day? What is your animus, James? What is the animus within you that makes you only see the negative in America?
Oh, there was positive. The movies back then were great. I mean, certainly, are you going to tell me that Sam Spade or the Maltese Falcon had some...
Let's forget Sam Spade. Let's not talk about movies. They're not my reference point. What about America today, James? Do you like it or do you dislike it?
Definitely has its problems. It has gone the other way. We need the medium. I mean, certainly the days when police could drag you in and beat you with phone books and rubber hoses and then decide, well, you're not really guilty and throw you out in the street and nothing happened. I don't think that was...
See, that's where you and I differ. I think we need a little bit more of that rather than the ACLU stopping the police from doing their job. I mean, you can't argue that walking through Golden Gate Park and stepping on hypodermic needles because junkies are allowed to shoot up in the park is a good thing, could you?
No, but then again, would you say that kids being told they're going to be blown up and hiding under desks is a good thing?
Excuse me? You mean it wasn't real? The threat between the Soviet Union and America that was invented?
I'm saying, do you think that that was a good thing, having kids hide under their desks?
Well, somehow we hid under the desk, but it didn't destroy our lives. On Friday night, we danced to pole lamps, and we danced to rock and roll. It didn't kill us. It didn't make us crazy. We live with what we had to live. We live with reality. The children today don't live with reality. They live with unreality. They put them on drugs, and they tell them that the minute something happens, right away they need closure and treatment specialists. We didn't have any treatment specialists. No, I think that the world was a much better place. How do you explain the fact that you can't go into certain parks today because the degenerates and the criminals have taken it over? It's because the police can't do their job. They can't do policing unless there's an actual body on the ground.
Well, as long as they're getting the actual criminals who commit the crimes, I have no qualms. I'm talking about innocent people who get routed.
All right, yeah. I heard the liberal view, which is that I'd rather have 99 guilty go free than one innocent man be arrested. I've heard that one before. Well, I'd reverse it and say I'd rather see 99 criminals arrested than one innocent man go free. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Go, go, go. You mixed up a Siciliano.
Italiano. Oh, go, go.
Like a crazy with a hey, Mambo.
Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Go, man, go.
No more mozzarella. Hey, Mambo.
Crazy, huh? Eddie loves it. He's having a good time. He knows that we're having a good Friday here. Hey, Goomba. Turn it off already. It's too much. Too much. Too much. I see the transfusion tree. I see the whole thing. The false teeth are clicking. Weather, 61 degrees, wind west of 12 miles an hour, humidity 62%, and a chance of Teddy pooping. Pressure 29.91 in clouds. BKN at 22,000 feet. Visibility 10.0 miles. That's my weather right now. Let's go back. You know, what we've been doing in radio so far is actually fun on a Friday. I feel relieved. I mean, I feel like I'm doing radio that's pleasant and pleasurable for me. I hope you're enjoying it. You're mixing a little politics. You know, it's the old thing of frame and set. And I think I've got to change it again. It can't be 99% politics and 1% of what I've been doing today. I may reverse it and do 99% of this and 1% of that, because otherwise that's enough already with my insides already turned outside. WTNT, boy, we're getting them all out of Washington today. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
It's good to talk to you.
You know what really I enjoy the best about your show is when you go into the stories of Juan Frank and, you know, growing up in the five boroughs. We had a Tom the Bum and young kids running down the subway. We learned charity from Tom the Bum.
Hold it. You're going to tell us a story. Quick, Tom the Bum. I'm listening.
Okay, Tom the Bum had he had one arm also, and he would stay in the subways, and our mothers used to, you know, he was like the horror show. He used to run down there, run on the other side.
Yeah, all right. So, right, you went down to see him. It was like a Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Right, but your mother would send you down there with food, and you'd, like, push the food with your foot. You'd say, hey, Tom, eat this, because he was an alcoholic, you know. But he had one.
Oh, but you didn't want to actually touch him. That was absolutely, because you could get leprosy.
You don't know what you're going to get. You know, you're scared, you're a little kid. But, you know, we learned charity with this guy. Tom the Bum was one of the best surgeons in the neighborhood. He cut his arm off because he lost a patient, and he became an alcoholic.
Wait a minute. Did you just make that up?
No, this is not. This is true, Mike. This is true. Tom the Bum.
What do you mean? He was a doctor who lost a patient, and he hated himself and cut his arm off?
Became an alcoholic and cut his arm off, and he lived in the subways. So we had to take care of him.
He sounds like a saint. The guy's like a saint, the story.
You know, but that's where we learn charity. You know, like these one-armed Franks, Tom the Bum. We all have stories. But it's the greatest thing to turn on the radio, hear the music, think about the old stories, you know, the 50s, the 60s, the Goomba.
Well, where did you grow up, Mike?
Downtown New York, Grant Street.
Oh, you were Lower East Side. And what, you were Italian?
Italian-American.
Yeah, I can hear it in your accent. So how are you? I'm saying it as a compliment. But how do you relate to the society today? Given the rich background you had, how do you relate to the society today? What do you see in the everyday life, Mike?
It's terrible. The kids don't.
That's
anything.
All. See, this is what I like about New Yorkers. They give you a straight answer, not a hem and a haw and a this and a that and a paragraph and then a sentence, then another Bingo! It's terrible. It is terrible. That's what I've been trying to say. It's horrible.
I sent my kid to New York every summer when he was growing up because I didn't want him to grow up with Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't know. New York's a pretty good place today. It's one of the better cities in the country. It's certainly different than it was under one of the mayors. We know that. And it's a different place. We understand that, Mike. But I thank you for listening to this show on TNT in Washington, D.C. 1-800-449-8255. All of the stories I didn't get to today are on michaelsavage.com. And I do have them updated all 7 days a week for your viewing pleasure. That's where I put the politics, okay? And today, there's a little politics mixed in. We've done the Watson, but now we're moving past the Watson. We talked about unsuccessful people and what do they have in common. And I haven't really gotten any calls on that. I said to you, it's their unwillingness to give of themselves or to offer a product or service. Many people produce, they'll write a book, for example, and it's not successful. So they get mad at society and say the society's stupid. Or they make, let's say they paint, and they paint some, the people aren't as smart as me. Well, it could be they're right. I mean, there could be in a future time the painting will be accepted. It's true for so many people, such as Gauguin. He didn't sell anything in his lifetime except one painting or so. And all of his paintings became very, very popular after he was dead. I kind of doubt that we have too many Gauguins right now. I think there's a lot of phonies out there who pretend that they're better than everybody else. But that's not the point. The bigger point is that most of us who are successful have produced a product or are providing a service that people want. The day my show becomes a show that the people don't want, I'm no longer in radio. Do you understand that? I'm providing a service is what I'm doing. I'm not making what's the product? The product is me. And what's me? What's me? My views, my humor, my intelligence, my depression, whatever it is. My voice itself is my product. Do you understand that? And the day you don't like it is the day I'm out of business, at which point I will simply get the white hat, drift off into eternity, and like Johnny Carson, you'll never hear from me again. I'll raise dogs. Instead of having one poodle pooping under my desk at night, I'll have five. And that's it. Instead of having one, I'll have five under the desk. That's all, and I'll have to leave the five houses at once. Anyway, in the next hour, again, we're going to go to Rick Roberts to get an update on the fire situation. Tonight he's going to interview some people who really know why there was such a foot dragging in the initial responders. And I think it's very important that we clear this up yesterday and today so we can move on to other things next week. It was a great tragedy. It still is. In fact, it's just beginning. But who is responsible? That's the issue. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Once again, we're going to look at what's behind the fires in Southern California, where there's very good reason now to believe that these fires were not natural. There's even some reason to suspect that these were caused either by illegal aliens or, guess what, terrorists. And so I'm going to hand it over to my colleague Rick Roberts. He has some amazing interviews today on this terribly tragic story. Please listen as Rick brings you the very latest from the front lines to the Savage Nation. Rick?
Thank you so much, Michael. This is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation, and it's always a pleasure to be here under these particular circumstances. I wish it were under different circumstances, but today is a good day. It's a good day in the sense that we have turned the corner. There are better days ahead. The over 600,000 people that evacuated themselves, for the most part, have been able to return to their homes or what's left of their homes. And now is the time for us to start asking questions. For the most part, people are out of harm's way. There are still fires burning up and down the coast, as you know. We still have fires in the very southern part of the state. Again, the size, the magnitude, the scope of these things still boggles the mind, even for somebody that has watched this behind the microphone play itself out time and time again. A little later, we're going to be talking with people that have some very, very strong messages. You know, Michael was talking about the possibility of arsonist. Well, the possibility is the word we can take out of that sentence. We know now that some people have been arrested for arson. One person was shot. And for my money, I think that's probably, I know some people won't like this, but if you are going to put so many people in harm's way, loss of life, 10 dead thus far, scores injured, then you deserve to stop breathing air. That's my particular position. I speak for no one else. Now, having said that, I've been hearing from all over the country, you know, we hear this, we hear that. The fact of the matter is, most of Southern California, certainly San Diego, the San Diego County area, which is huge, where you're talking the eighth largest city in the United States of America, the only problems we have had have come from the hands of illegals stealing supplies and food and water from Qualcomm Stadium. That's where the San Diego Chargers play. Another couple illegals were caught looting. And a little later, we'll be talking with the district attorney of San Diego. She doesn't care for this much. As a matter of fact, 4 years ago in 2003, she made it her business to prosecute these people so that they would get every hour due them. Because when you declare an emergency, such as the case here in San Diego and Malibu and on up the coast, that is no longer a misdemeanor. That's a felony punishable by 3 years in prison. Also, the scammers, just like clockwork, they come out of the woodwork. But we've got to look past this, and we've got to say, okay, exactly what happened? How can we keep it from happening again? Well, in the infamous words of Presidente Jorge Bush, which flew in for his photo op yesterday with Arnold Schwarzenegger and a few others and Pelosi and Boxer and go down the list, I guess these people are just here setting fires that Americans won't set. It's a cultural thing. Whether intentional or unintentional, the results are the same. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people were having to flee their homes in fear of their safety. Some didn't make it. Just as we talked with personal hygiene yesterday, you can't have illegals camping out in canyons, cooking their food, and then running off and leaving campfires. You can't do it. In some cases, that may be what has happened in some of these fires. In other other instances, you just had an evil person setting fires just to see what would happen. Again, the size and scope of what occurred here in Southern California, I think most people miss, unless you've listened to the Savage Nation. You may not know that nearly a million people in California evacuated. Not 50,000 like in New Orleans, but nearly a million. 600,000 plus just in the Southern California area in San Diego, the city and county. You may not know that over 750 square miles, a half a million acres, an area the size that you could set New York City and the surrounding burgs right on top of, has burned. Nearly 2,000 homes. It's just absolutely phenomenal, the size and scope of this thing. But again, at the end of the day, I've got to be positive where I can find something positive to talk about. There has been loss of life. There's been loss of pets. There are acres have burned. Homes have burned. A little later, you may have seen him on the national news, a very good friend of mine that I work with on the TV side. I'm on the radio side. He's on the TV side. I was out covering the fires in an area called 4S Ranch. As the television cameras followed him with blazing homes behind him, he walks up in a driveway. He's very still, and he realizes he's looking at his own home burned to the ground, a home he'd been in for 20-some years. There are story after story after story just like that. There are also stories of the best of the human condition coming through in a terrible tragedy like this. So we're going to go through all of that. We're also going to be talking with someone that was more than a little responsible for getting that aircraft up in the air and the flame retardant down. And again, if you're living in the Southwest, that's where I grew up, tornadoes are every year occurrence. You see them coming, you go for cover. If you're on the Gulf Coast, hurricanes, just part of the package. People don't understand wildfires. And let me try to get this across if I can. We're not talking about a forest fire where Smokey the Bear in his little hat says, please don't start. No, we're talking about neighborhoods. Neighborhoods where, you know, bikes are parked out in front and cars are being washed and waxed and kids are playing on the trampoline in the backyard. And you can smell a barbecue where the neighbors are gathering. We're talking those neighborhoods. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about half a million acres literally burned to the ground. Now, Michael was talking about arsonists, yes. Terrorists, possibly. But I'll tell you where we can put a lot of this blame is squarely at the feet of the environmentalists that run this state. Now, look, I like the little animals as much as the next guy. I do. I like plants and leafy green things. I love that. That's nice. You know, oh, isn't that pretty? Yes, it is. But in a situation that you have in Southern California, this is not the first time, and statistically, I think you can say it probably won't be the last time. These environmental nuts need to be driven back into the canyons currently occupied by the illegals that we tolerate as a sanctuary state. Now, do I sound a little upset? Yeah, I probably am. I probably am a little upset. We did a much better job this time than we did in 2003 in saving lives and homes and such. But still, this makes absolutely no sense to me. It's your property, and you can't clear it because you may screw up the gnat catcher or the mesa mint or the, you know, the vernal pools or this or that or the other thing. And these environmental nut jobs, well, this is all to preserve it for another generation. Well, you know what? It won't be here in another generation. You know, you've just burned to a crisp all the ground cover for rabbits, for deer, for this, for that. Well, yes, but in the big picture, I even heard some idiot parroting what Reed said about global warming. Well, we can thank Bush for this because the global warming, you know, has nothing to do with global warming. These are very easy problems to figure out. We're not taking care of business, and we need to take care of business. We need to stop all of this politically correct, free-to-be, you-and-me, hug-a-tree nonsense and get back to business. You've got extremely high unpredictable winds. You've got tons and tons of fuel thanks to the environmental nuts. You've got hilly terrain where they create their own microclimates, and then you've got low humidity. So what happens? You have wildfires. Once it starts, people think, well, you know, I've seen a fire. It'll burn over there, and I'll keep watching it. Yeah, I'll get this together, and I'll look out, and I'll keep watching it. Okay, I'll get this. That's not what a wildfire does. I actually have watched the raw package video as it comes back into the station before being filed. And I'm looking at one. I'm seeing a firehead. A firehead is that front line of fire that comes up a gully, up a canyon, if you will. And it creates its own little microclimate behind it. It can be running. That fire can be running faster than you can run. It's absolutely astonishing. You don't outrun stuff like that. You simply pray. And unfortunately, in one of the neighborhoods here, a man and his wife were found dead in their homes yesterday. They were packing to leave. They couldn't outrun it. I think most people don't understand how that works. So what we're going to do first, I'm going to let you talk to the district attorney. The district attorney in a city and a county that has experienced this far too often. As I said, when you have a crisis like this, when you have something as overwhelming and devastating as this, it's no surprise the politicians will politicize it in some form or fashion. They politicize the troops. This should be no exception, I guess, in their little empty heads. But when it comes to this kind of situation, you see the very best the human condition can offer. And you also see the very worst. I mean, people are literally huddled with their children in their arms and their dogs in their leashes and just trying to get through the night, and someone steals from them. And as I said during the course of my broadcast over the last 5 days, 10, 11 hours a day, you know, if a set of cutlery from a burned-out home is worth 3 years in jail, get after it. We'll be happy to give you something for free. Well, free to you. Three meals and a cot in the prison. We'll be talking about that. We are also going to be talking about some of the delays that have been mentioned about, did we get enough aircraft in the air? Was Boxer right when she said, we didn't have enough equipment. If we just had more equipment, I'm reaching out to the other states. If we had more equipment, well, you know why we don't have enough equipment? Because half of it's over in Iraq fighting that illegal war. First of all, that's an out-and-out lie. There is absolutely no documentation at all anywhere that supports such a ridiculous, moronic statement at all, any more than global warming caused the California wildfires. We're going to get into all of this, and we'll take your calls as well. This is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation. You can give us a call at 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-TALK. But I got to tell you, at the end of the day, I am proud. I am so proud that over half a million people, evacuated themselves. They didn't wait for some government bus to pull up out front. Okay, it's the government. You can pile in, bring your stuff. Yeah, we'll wait. They didn't do that. They took care of each other. They set a model for the rest of the country to look at and observe and to follow, God forbid, if they should be in such a situation. Good job, San Diego. Good job, Southern California. You did it. And you did it without government intervention. You did it without a bunch of political bureaucrats sitting there. Well, I don't know. This form hasn't been filled out, and that form hasn't been filled out. You know what? You can put the forms where the sun don't shine. At the end of the day, these people took care of themselves. They took care of business. The fires are out, and these people trying to make political hay out of this. Well, I can't say that. I'd like to be invited back someday, and so I'll keep that thought to myself. This is Rick Roberts. You are on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Rick Roberts. You're on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK. Well, hopefully we can bring some sense of the size and scope of what has been going on in California since late Sunday night. A lot of good stories to tell, and every time something like this happens, the very best is shown and the very worst is shown. But this is probably not the place for looting. With me is a good friend of mine, and as well as District Attorney for San Diego, District Attorney Bonnie DeManis. DA DeManis, how you doing? Got you, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Well,
ready
good.
Some of these scam artists, though.
Well, for those of you that don't know, District Attorney DeManis has been our DA for quite some time, and just, well, what was it? It was, 2003. We went through this thing all over again. You took office in January of 2003, as a matter of fact. And in the Cedar Fire, we had the same situation. We had the same group of folks, it seems, trying to take advantage and re-victimize people that had already been victims But they don't want to do that in Southern California, not with you around. Because tell people exactly what happens, and tell some of the stories about some of the looting we've heard about.
Well, first of all, we are ready for anyone that thinks they're going to come here and re-victimize our people in San Diego. We have all of local law enforcement, FBI, all the federal agencies, and the National Guard helping out, and the DAI investigators making sure that nobody's out there looting. We've only had about four or five incidences where people have been arrested. Those people are going to be facing felony charges because in a state of an emergency, just looting is a felony, and they face up to 3 years in state prison. And we're not going to cut any breaks to anyone that is trying to prey on the people of San Diego. They've been through enough.
D.A. DeManis, since we are friends, we talk quite a bit off the air, and I haven't had time with everything that's been going on in the last week to talk to you about this, but there was a situation at Qualcomm. Qualcomm Stadium was sort of a staging point. It's where the Chargers play, where we actually had eight guys in a van stealing from the evacuees.
That's what I heard. I heard that there was some arrests from Qualcomm. In fact, I understand that what they decided to do was to check identification because they were getting information that there were some people abusing what was happening. And actually, when they started checking IDs, about 1,000 people bailed out of Qualcomm Stadium right away. And so the people that they caught and arrested were people that were taking, you know, like all the water, all the goods that have been donated through the goodness and kindness of San Diegans, and they were driving away in a van and selling it to people who really needed it. So, again, preying on these people, and we're not going to tolerate that.
Well, the final word for looters and the scam artists, I know you got a word for them too, right?
Crooks.
You bet.
Crooks, you better get out of Dodge is what I have to say to them, because in San Diego you're not welcome. And there are a lot of scams that we've been talking about. I know you, Rick, and I talked on your show yesterday. Now that the fires are getting close to contain, people's homes have been damaged and some of them have been lost. So they should watch out for people that are going to, again, try and take advantage of them. One of the first things that happens is people come around looking to remove the debris that's out there.
And they take, and they basically take the deposits and they run. And that's, look, here's the bottom line. If you're anywhere in Southern California, don't try to scam anybody. Not this time.
Savage.
This is Rick Roberts. You're on the Savage Nation. Always a pleasure to be in the Savage Nation. I wish it were under different circumstances as the dust begins to clear quite literally. And I look around and I'm thinking to myself, does anyone really realize the crisis that California just went through? A 500,000 acres, thousands of homes, upwards of 1 million people evacuated. And I know the people are simply sitting here, what just happened to us? Well, to some of us, it was an inconvenience. It was a week that we certainly won't forget to others. It was a week that meant they lost their friends, their relatives. And I guess when you think about it, it's very, very difficult to understand exactly what that means to some folks. We had a situation where a man named John Bain and his wife, Victoria, they were well aware of the wildfire approaching from the east, and they were preparing to flee their hillside home late Sunday. But for some reason, they never got out. They were found dead in their homes. Bain was a real estate broker, very well liked. His wife taught humanities at a middle school. And really, until that human toll hits home, it's just so many images running across your television screen, and that strange yellow glow where the sun should be, and the smoke that fills every single room of your house, even though you're miles and miles and miles away from any fire. I got a call this morning from Sharon Radford. Sharon, welcome to the Savage Nation. Hi,
Rick.
It's been some hours since you and I have last talked. It's and again, I'm sorry for your loss. You were Chris, as he was known, was almost your best friend, was he not?
He was a very, very good friend, best friend anybody could have.
What do we know about what happened? I mean, again, for most people listening, not in this area, they don't understand how fire can overcome you so quickly. And I've tried to explain it, but this is a situation that most people will never understand, even those that live in the area, unless they actually see it. Chris and Victoria, great people, a big part of the community, and I know a big part of your life, right?
Exactly. He was my anchor, you know, he was the person, my voice of reason, the person I went to. He was always there for me for 34 years. I'm still numb. I mean, I've had to pack because we're not evacuating. We had plans to move tomorrow and we have to do it. So that's been sort of a distraction. But every time I stop, and my daughter she's in a bad state. I mean, she's known him all her life. I mean, he was the man if anything had happened to me, it was Chris and Vicky that I would have wanted to take my children before they were adults. That's how much I respected him. I'm going to miss him so much.
Jerry Nicholas is a Valley Center senior attorney who went to high school with your friend. And evidently they were joking just before this that they would come to their house. He was going to make an attempt to get as much stuff out of the house as possible. And I think that was something that impacted you this morning more than anything else, getting stuff out of the house. That may have been what killed him.
It's just stuff. I mean, I would have given up everything I own if we'd gotten him out of the house. I mean, there's probably other people out there that are saying the same thing. And when you're faced with this, anybody out there, I don't care what disaster it is, if it's, you know, a hurricane, a tornado, a wildfire, and Rick's right, until you've seen a wildfire, and I've lived in California for 50 years, I've seen a lot of them. These last two have been the scariest, than the Crescent Fire. I was living in Mexico, and my daughter had to evacuate pregnant, and I felt so helpless. And we all feel helpless when it happens. It's stuff, people. Go. Leave. Get your children, get your animals, and go. Whatever they tell you, if it's after an earthquake or whatever, and I know that, you know, there's going to be some comparisons made because of the last major disaster that this country went through. But California, all of our disasters just hit us out. We have no warning. I mean, we might get 5 minutes warning. If you're on this side, if you're on the bad side of a Santa Ana blowing, you might have 5 minutes, if that, to get out. And so we are very prepared for this sort of thing. And I'm very proud to be a Californian and very proud to be a San Diegan because our officials took over. But when they tell you, people, please, just take it and go. Because, I mean, there's plenty of us that would give them everything to have them back right now.
Well, Sharon, I wanted you to be able to get your message out because all too often we think that, you know, it's a strange situation, Sharon, this human condition. It's all about control many times. We control this little part of the world, and we think, okay, our home, we're safe, the kids are there, everything's fine. But when a crisis like this comes up, and I know people, you know, watching and listening in New York and in Florida and Atlanta and just all over the country have been contacting me saying they couldn't believe what they were seeing on television. That didn't even come close. Didn't even come close to what was actually happening on the ground. And I guess if there is any positive to come out of the death of your friends, it's the message, please. You know, some things you can't control. You cannot control a Santa Ana wildfire moving at 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. Sometimes those winds will reach upwards of 100 miles an hour coming over the top, and if there's fire in front of it, you can't outrun that. And your friends were trying to take as much out of the house as possible, and it may have cost their lives. So tell the rest of the country what you want them to know. What's the bottom line for you, Sharon?
The bottom line is, if you feel in danger or they tell you to go, it's only stuff, people. It's only a house. It's only art. It's only collections. It's only papers. It doesn't matter because we all want to see you at the other side of it. And it's only stuff. I don't care about your stuff. I care about the people. And that's what everybody has to think about when this happens.
Sharon, I want to thank you for being on the Savage Nation. You're in our thoughts and our prayers, and again, if there is any positive to come out of this, aside from the memories you have of your good friends, it may be somebody listening, if they're ever, God forbid, in one of these natural disasters. Some things we can't control, and the sooner we realize that, the safer we'll be. And those that are under our responsibility, the safer they will be. Sharon, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and we'll be thinking about you. And please stay in touch. And you know, I wanted to talk to Sharon because she's one of thousands going through the same thing. When you move 600,000 people out of harm's way, someone is going to be touched. Where I work, we've had two people lose everything doing what they do, which is trying to keep people informed. Sharon, thank you. All right, 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK. Let's go to San Francisco. KNEW. Steve, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hey, Don.
Good.
I just want to make a point that these people, like these environmental groups, Sierra Club, PETA, they want to push all these things, and then when it goes and blows up in their face, they don't take any responsibility for it. They shrug their shoulders. They should be sued in a class action lawsuit by all the people that lost here, and even up in the fires in Tahoe. If you're going to make policies and they have power, they should be held accountable for that stuff.
That's well, Steve, yeah, well, that's a good point. I have no tolerance for, you know, all of us have pet peeves. You know, my pet peeve are lazy people, people that are incompetent, people that say one thing and do something else. I'd like all of those environmental wackos that say, no, you can't clear that 40-year-old growth away from your backyard because, I don't know, some gnat catcher lives there. Or there's a tortoise about the size of your thumb that, you know, comes by once every 6 months. I'd like those people to sit down with Sharon for about a half hour and let her tell the stories, the memories that she made with two people that were a very big part of the community that aren't here anymore because the fires moved too quickly. I'd like those environmental nut jobs that are so concerned that, well, you know, if we don't do this, you know, the deer, well, the deer are going to starve right now unless you hay them because everything's gone. A half a million acres is gone. It's not there anymore. Now, what, do you want to build another zoo? I mean, it's just, it's unconscionable to me. Unconscionable that these people could actually make a case for some of this environmental nonsense. You know, believe it or not, human beings are at the top of the food chain. I know that comes as a surprise to some folks. I like the little animals as much as the next guy. Trust me, I do. But when it comes to loss of life, did you hear the emotion in the woman's voice? Someone that she's known for 30 years, that's a part of her family, that would have taken her kids, God forbid something happened to her. They're not here right now. And you can't look at the environmental wacko's input into this particular part of the country and say that that didn't have a hand in it. It did. Denver, Colorado. Aaron, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi, how you doing? I'm kind of a unique individual on this subject. I'm a firefighter and a medic, and I do aircraft, different varieties of aircraft. Lots of equipment is available to California, tons of it. A lot of the problem comes with a bureaucracy. You know, they'll say they want a lot of stuff, and they can mean it, at least some of the people that are requesting such equipment. But getting the equipment to them by jumping through a lot of red tape, and there's a lot of corruption in there, too, of contract firefighting and all kinds of little things, even with aircraft. It's like I could have put three or four aircraft out there in you know, 2 hours. But there's just lots of hoops to jump through, and the problem with getting equipment to these people or to help is there's too much bureaucracy involved to it. I was involved with the FEMA, you know, with the FEMA going down to Louisiana, and you wouldn't believe the amount of corruption in. You can't even explain it.
I would understand because we had that during the Cedar Fire, where we lost so many lives and so much property, and we did a good job of trying to cut through some of that bureaucracy. But you're right. Is there corruption? You bet. I'm working on two different stories behind the scenes. I have to be very careful because I don't want to get sued, but I'll tell you this. Overheard in a conversation between a senior aide to the governor and a local congressional aide, the comment was that the CDF Firefighters Union was thinking of running hit ads on three local congressmen. Bill Bray, Isa, Hunter. Why? Because due to their insistence, military helicopters were allowed to fight the fire without union spotters. Union members would lose out on triple overtime pay. We were talking about $1,000 a day. Subsequently, what happened? Things burned for 48 hours. To boil it down to a simple picture, a person that I am working on right now behind the scenes, and I won't name the name yet, they let San Diego burn for 48 hours so the union firemen could get a big overtime paycheck for being spotters in military helicopters. I've got the sources. I've got the statements. I'm putting it together. Trust me, I know exactly what you're talking about. I have not forgotten this. I've not forgotten the last time around. And we are going to work on this, and we are going to bust these things wide open. 30 union spotters could have made, let's say, what, $1,000 per day each in overtime pay? That makes it $30,000 per day in overtime pay for all the spotters. Roughly $60,000 in total overtime pay. Was it worth it? I don't think so. I don't think so. We learned from the Cedar Fire. We cut back. We cut back on all this bureaucratic nonsense. But I will say this. Boxer was dead wrong. We had the equipment we needed. It took some doing, and it took some congressional pressure. But at the end of the day, it got done. And we didn't lose any more lives than we did because the type of people we're dealing with. Self-sufficient. They didn't wait on the government. But trust me, I'm working on some stories right now that within about the next 4 or 5 days, yeah, some heads are going to roll. This is Rick Roberts. You're on the Savage Nation. Savage. Rick Roberts, you're on the Savage Nation, and Michael, thank you so much for the ability to tell the rest of the country exactly what's been happening here since late Sunday night. You know, we were talking about the human toll, of course, the 500,000 acres, the thousands of homes, the literally hundreds of thousands of people that were evacuated, and obviously their lives changed in some cases, as evidenced by Sharon Radford last segment, changed forever. But it's very difficult to express to the rest of the country just exactly how extensive this was. And it hit home to me with someone that I work with. I'm on the radio side. He's on the television side. As a matter of fact, I saw him just the other night at dinner and said hello. And then 24 hours later, his life changed forever. He is News 8, San Diego CBS affiliate station. He's in the field. He's at the anchor desk. He's just about everybody, everyone to everything. Everybody knows who he is. He's a part of the San Diego landscape in a very positive way. He's very community involved, and he is with my sister station, the CBS affiliate, News 8 here in San Diego. He is Larry Himmel. Larry, how you doing, my friend?
Rick, I'm doing remarkably well considering how the week began.
You know, I talked to you earlier this afternoon, and you said you may have some good news. A lot of people know your story worldwide now, by the way. But, you know, I was watching some of the uncut video, and as I was walking out of my broadcast studio, I looked up, and I see you up there. You've got your mask on, and you're trying to talk, and literally the flames are, I don't know how high, 40, 50 feet high behind you. And then I learned later in the day you were standing in front of your own home. Tell everyone that story.
Well, Rick, on Sunday, it begins on Sunday for me, and because we've known each other for so many years, you know, my usual beat is the people stories, the kind of kicker stories, the lighter side of the news, the make you feel good about what you call home stories. And on Sunday, I was called and asked to go to the front lines of the fire, which was then burning in San Diego's backcountry. Little did we know what a firestorm it would become, and it was one of those brush fires that all too frequently happen out there, but they happen in rural areas. And my boss said, we need all hands on deck. You need to go out there, and we need to get you talking to people who are getting evacuated, it's horse country, getting their animals out of there, talk to people who may have lost property, their homes. And it's the worst thing reporters do. You know, somebody's house is on fire, that somebody's having the worst moment of their lives, and we tap them on the shoulder and say, excuse me, can I get a soundbite from you? And I was out there on Sunday until late Sunday evening, and I went home and I said to my wife, and this fire now is 10 miles away from where I am, and I said, boy, I could not do that for a living. I couldn't do that hard news, all that human heartache, seeing people lose everything in a flash. And we went to bed, and at 5 o'clock the next morning, woke up to that god-awful smell that you know, Rick, is all over
right.
The city. It's just everywhere. It's just a sickening, sweet smell. And the sky was black and ashen, and we knew that it was close, and we didn't know how close. So we did the evacuation as everybody else did. And then we grabbed a few things, but I thought, and I gauged incorrectly, that I would have time to get back and get more. So we took the bare essentials, got the dog, got the cat. I drove my family closer to the coast where I knew they'd be out of harm's way, hooked up with a News 8 photographer and a news van, and started back the opposite way on the evacuation route. And by that time, cars are streaming the other way out of the area, and we're headed back that way. And our job, basically, is just to find a story. Get to the edge of the fire as close as we can get, and find a one-person story. Tell it in the tone of one person. And I said to my photographer, let's just drive by the house. And it was on the route, so we drove past it, and by that time the flames were just about on it. I could see from about a mile away. And as we got closer to the scene, in fact, probably just a few hundred yards away, I saw a fire truck coming down my driveway. And the guy got to the bottom of the driveway, and he said, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to save your house.
Now, Larry, we've got just about a minute left, but I saw the video. What was going through your mind as you stood in front of your own house?
I'm standing in front of my own house, and I'm trying to describe. The reporter instincts kicked in. I'm just trying to describe what I saw and what I felt and what was going on behind me. And believe me, it was an out-of-body experience. I had no idea what words were coming out of my mouth. And I told my wife, watch TV if you want to see our house.
Oh, my God. Larry, our thoughts and prayers are with you and your wife. And, you know, you're such a big part of the community, and we care so much for you. We're there for you. News 8's Larry Himmel, the San Diego CBS affiliate. I'm Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation.